You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're spending the hour with Milwaukee's health commissioner. Wisconsin's largest city, more than 590,000 residents, has suffered roughly 40% of the state's coronavirus deaths. And the pandemic is hitting Black and brown Americans especially hard. Milwaukee, no exception. So do you live in or near Milwaukee? Do you know someone who's tested positive for COVID-19? What do you want to ask the health commissioner this hour? We're at 800-642-1234. Jeanette Kowalik is the commissioner of health for the city of Milwaukee. Commissioner Kowalik, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Well, let's start with the latest numbers. How many people have tested positive for the coronavirus in Milwaukee? What did the numbers tell you this morning?
So as of yesterday night, the number of cases in the county is 1,444. The city of Milwaukee is 1,123. And the number of fatalities or deaths is 56 in the county.
So as you look at these numbers each day, what are you seeing in the trend lines? What are you tracking and following as health commissioner?
Well, first of all, this is very personal and real for me since I'm from Milwaukee and I grew up in the Sherman Park neighborhood, which is where one of the first hot spots was located. We had our first case or detected our first case on Friday the 13th in the month of March. And since that point in time, tomorrow will be the 4-week mark, and you could see this explosion of cases. The first week, just to give you a sense of how quickly this virus has moved, and looking at other cities and countries, it follows the same pattern. So the first week, which was the week of the 13th of March, we had 73 cases in the city. But the majority of those cases were African-American male. So 70% at that point in time. And then we also had the age breakdown of 26% of those cases were individuals in their 30s. And then 25% of the cases were individuals in their 40s. So that at that point in time, we had very precise race and ethnicity data. As the weeks have gone by, the unknown or unreported race and ethnicity variable has gotten bigger. So as of late, it's about in the high 20s right now. So we're working on trying to fill the gap on some of those race and ethnicity cases so that we can have more precise data like we did at week one.
Why is the data not as precise right now as the weeks progress? I would think our data would get better.
Well, part of it has to do with the there's more labs that are processing COVID-19 samples. In the beginning, there were only two labs that were processing. There were the public health labs. They were the Milwaukee Health Department lab located in downtown Milwaukee, and then the State Lab of Hygiene located in Madison, Wisconsin, where we're you know able to maintain better control over the data that we're processing. But as other labs came online, whether they were related to healthcare providers, whether they were private corporate labs like those that are out of state, the large labs like Quest and LabCorp, it creates some more challenges with data transfer between electronic medical records and then the data that gets reported into the Wisconsin Electronic Disease Surveillance System. And also there's an important point where a patient may not want to provide their race and ethnicity data. So we're not sure if there's more that are declining to provide that information. This is something that's being investigated right now. But we do know that the majority, at least half of all of the cases of the data we do have, are African American.
So as the enterprise for fighting the virus grows and grows, gets larger, so does this web of data that you're trying to keep track of each day.
Absolutely, which is why we're functioning in an emergency operations center mode right now. So once we declared the emergency on the 13th of March, then it enabled us to move into this formal emergency structure, which enables us to have a whole like surveillance unit, which is partly other health departments, police department. They have an analyst, and then leveraging local academics that are trained in public health to assist with some of the data analysis.
We're talking with Jeanette Kowalik. She's Commissioner of Health for the City of Milwaukee Health Department. You can join in with your questions. What have you heard about the coronavirus outbreak in Milwaukee? What answers do you need? Do you live in or around Milwaukee? Do you know someone who's tested positive? What is life like for you, and what resources do you need? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Commissioner Kowalik, can you give us a little bit more information about what the surveillance unit is doing? Because, you know, once you find out someone has tested positive, how much can you figure out where that person has been and who else might be at risk or who else might be positive in their life, in their community?
Oh, absolutely. So this is basic public health. One of the essential functions of a public health department is to conduct surveillance. So there's, you know, various forms of surveillance. But what we've been doing is using our public health nurses to follow up on the cases. So once a case comes through the Wisconsin Electronic Disease Surveillance System, and that's based off of the jurisdiction where the person resides. So, you know, that's always a question of why, who's handling the cases. It's based off of where they live. So the nurse receives the case, and then they start the actual case investigation where they're looking at what did this person do over the last so many days. So what we do is we look at the date of the onset of symptoms, and the symptoms of COVID-19 are, we're still looking at sore throat, muscle aches, cough, respiratory distress, and of course the hallmark one is the fever of 100.4 degrees Fahrenheit or higher. Oftentimes people are cycling chills and fever, and their condition worsens. So it's just not a little cold. There's also a need to distinguish if it's the flu, because flu is still going around. But between flu and COVID-19, many providers are testing for both. If the person qualifies for the COVID-19 test, since there's limited testing, so the state determines that criteria, which is why our numbers are not higher, because we don't have enough testing supplies to get everyone, like doing full on community surveillance.
How much more testing supplies do you need?
Well, our testing, if you look at the population of the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County, it's really low. I mean, I would say it's probably 1% if you do the math. And if you're looking at what we're seeing now, this explosion of cases, if we were able to test more broadly, we would really have a better sense of how COVID-19 is moving through our community, which is why the governor's office and the local health officials, including myself, have supported these more aggressive orders, like the stay at home or safer at home order, being able to oversee or mandate social distancing or physical distancing is one of the only tools that we have to slow this down at this point in time, which is why having an in-person election was so contrary to what we were trying to do. And you should also know that the state added, if you attended the election in person on Tuesday, to the electronic disease surveillance system, so we can track if there's another wave of cases that will come out of in-person election activities.
So that data has been tracked for people who went to the polls. There was also data entered to be able to track who was infected, perhaps because of going to the polls.
Yes. So we were very pleased the state moved so quickly. They added that yesterday, actually. So the incubation period for COVID-19 is 14 days. And when I kind of dialing back to the nurse piece when they're doing the investigation, is they look at the onset of symptoms, and then they add 3 days before that, and that's the window. So who all did you come in contact with less than 6 feet for more than 10 minutes? That's considered a close contact. And then those individuals are contacted to find out if they have developed symptoms. And if they haven't, then they're on watch. They're on quarantine for 14 days from that point of contact with the actual case. So this is a very daunting process. Some people have one contact. Some people have 100 contacts.
We're talking with Milwaukee's Health Commissioner Jeanette Kowalik about how the coronavirus has spread in the state's largest city and how they're working to stop it. Do you live in Milwaukee? Have you or your friends or family been tested for the virus? Do you stand in those long lines Tuesday to vote in Milwaukee and worry that you might have contracted the virus then? Share your experience. Share your questions at 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Commissioner Kowalik right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we have Milwaukee's Health Commissioner here on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Milwaukee County, starting today, will roll out a social distancing plan for public transit. Only 10 passengers will be allowed on public buses. Once a bus is full, it will no longer pick up additional riders. It's one of the efforts underway to try to help flatten the curve. Do you ride the bus? What is it like now? Do you know people who've left the Metro Milwaukee area to perhaps lessen the chance of them contracting the virus? How do you think the rest of Wisconsin should aid Milwaukee in this outbreak? Your questions, your insights, they're welcome through the hour, 800-642-1234. We have Jeanette Kowalik with us, Commissioner of Health for Milwaukee, and she stays with us. Commissioner, we heard from Kevin in Rice Lake, called in to ask whether the projections for how many people will be infected, if that factored into the election this week.
Well, a number of health officers from across the state signed a joint letter urging our legislators to reconsider and delay the election. So we provide all of the science, you know, looking at different types of closures, looking at other jurisdictions, other states, what could be done here to save lives. This is really what this is all about. So that letter was sent out over the weekend, and then, you know, there was no vote, right? Also, the Wisconsin Public Health Association and the Wisconsin Association of Local Health Departments and Boards of Health, together, they also submitted a letter in support of delaying the election. So you have the scientists, you have the subject matter experts, you have the you know, boots on the ground, you know, representing health departments and jurisdictions all across the state. There was about 25 of us that signed that joint letter. So it wasn't just the city of Milwaukee or Milwaukee County. It was important to show that these concerns are valid across the entire state, and that information was not clearly was not reviewed or even part of the consideration to delay the election.
Almost 19,000 city of Milwaukee residents voted in person at the polls Tuesday. What are you most concerned about as you look at that number, almost 19,000?
Well, the concern is, you know, another, we were hoping that we could flatten this curve a little bit more quickly. But when you bring people together, which again is contrary to the whole order, granted there was an exception for essential functions such as voting, but that could mean absentee ballot, that, you know, it could be other types of voting, not necessarily in person. But bringing that many people together, even with all of the best efforts, with making sure everybody's standing 6 feet apart, making sure there's enhanced cleaning, sanitizing, I mean, we're still learning about novel coronavirus or COVID-19. There's some things about this virus, you know, every day, every week, we're learning new things. For instance, with the masks, Friday, the CDC issued this update about everyone should wear masks or mouth something to cover your mouth. Whereas 2 weeks ago, they were saying, don't do that unless you are immunocompromised or, you know, something to that effect or over the age of 60. So that's part of the problem here is bringing 19,000 people together. The guidance and the data that we have right now about this new virus, there's things that we don't know about it. And, you know, putting people at risk because, yes, everyone has the right to vote, it's just very disheartening. And we were very, it was a very emotional time for many of us, because we see the writing on the wall that there's going to be increased cases and possibly deaths associated with this, because we even received complaints during the election from some sites where there, you know, people were standing too close in line or something like that. I mean, how can you manage that many people and for the entire day? I mean, from 6 a.m., we had staff on site to 10 p.m., which I think was Riverside High School went the longest. But even in Green Bay, where that, you know, they were still voting into the hours of the night. I mean, it's very, very disheartening. That's the best way I can say it.
We're talking with Jeanette Kowalik, the Commissioner of Health for the City of Milwaukee, taking your questions about COVID-19 and the public health response. Have you heard strategies used in other big cities to combat the coronavirus? What are some things happening in your community, your neighborhood? What questions do you have about the stay-at-home order, the safer-at-home order? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Commissioner, you keep mentioning the explosion of cases in Milwaukee, and these public health nurses, my guess is you have a limited supply of public health nurses who can do the detective work here. Will you have enough people to be able to be able to track down what you need to do in order to help stop these explosions?
Well, you know, public health has been challenged over the years as far as reductions in funding, losing positions to attrition, health departments, you know, not focusing on direct service anymore, contracting that out or letting private sector and other nonprofits handle that. So when you get to the point of responding to a pandemic and you see all of these challenges that have happened over the years, it absolutely makes it very, very complicated to manage an outbreak of this size. So what we've done is we've brought back some retired public health nurses to assist. You know, it's like riding a bike. You know, you just get the updated guidance and, you know, knowing how to interview people and gather information. We're also bringing in staff from other units in the health department. So expanding our bench. And then, you know, we are one of 11 health departments in Milwaukee County. So helping each other out when we're responding. I know Wauwatosa has a lot of cases because they have the medical complex as well as some other senior or long-term care facilities. And then also West Dallas has had some rise in cases too. So it's like, how are we helping each other out? And then there's the state. So the state is charged with providing some overflow support and assistance. So we're looking at what are some ways for us to do this in a more efficient way, since there are so many cases. But we know our communities versus like the state, where they're like, you know, more general in nature. So it's just a matter of getting everyone on the same page because this is far from over.
And far from over, you've been watching University of Washington data as you try to track the timeline for when perhaps Milwaukee will hit a peak. There was some talk around the 17th of April. Have you seen any moving targets there? What are you watching for out of that data?
Yes, that was actually moved up yesterday to the 13th of April. So that was the main projection that we were using to help with the planning for the hospital surge. But now that that's moved up, it's basically Monday, right?
Yeah.
There's some things that are in motion that there'll be like maybe a week and a half delay in having some of those things up and going. Again, these are projections, so they could be wrong, but as far as we know, they're pretty decent projections. There's many other universities and research centers that also have projection types of activities and resources too, but the University of Washington is the main one that we've been using.
Commissioner, there is also prep work being done for Expo Center in West Allis to house overflow patients with beds there. What is the plan looking like there, and when will that be staged?
Yeah, that my understanding is there's a lot of movement and activity related to that. I mean, time is of the essence. The latest I've heard is that that facility should be ready by the 21st of April. So this is what I'm saying. Like, their projection is the 13th now. It was the 17th. But if the overflow facility is not ready until the 21st, there's going to be some tension there. The projections are accurate.
Will this be enough? There's talk that this would hold 800 beds. Would that be enough to manage such a surge? And what about enough respirators?
Yes. So my understanding is the number that would be available is based off of what is needed. So again, these are all, you know, algorithms and projections. We really don't know until we experience it. So doing our best, looking at whatever data we have, and just being very nimble because things are changing daily and hourly. So, you know, as we hit our peak and really move into our peak, we'll really see, you know, what the true gaps are. But, you know, we know that the system that we have now, everyone is concerned about access to ventilators, respirators, ICU units, hospital beds. So this is something that the healthcare system at large is working on. So they're in the process of providing that those numbers, because I have received many requests for the numbers, and that's their data. So they will be reporting that out soon.
We're exploring the strategies, the data, the analysis that Milwaukee is using to help stop the spread of the coronavirus with the city's health commissioner at our side, Jeanette Kowalik. What do you think Milwaukee needs to do right now to help its residents get through this? What have you heard about how Milwaukee hospitals and healthcare workers are dealing with this pandemic? Join the conversation. Your questions, your perspectives, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Just a heads up on our programming here, I want to point you to our website where you'll find live coverage of the daily White House Coronavirus Task Force briefings. Go to WPR.org for those real-time updates. Right now, we're talking with the Commissioner of Health for the City of Milwaukee. Fielding your questions through the hour, we're learning that Milwaukee officials are getting closer to opening a facility to handle overflow patients at State Fair Park in West Allis. Meanwhile, an isolation facility is being set up for Milwaukee County's homeless population on the grounds of the St. Francis de Sales Seminary in St. Francis. So what are some of the things adding to the challenges that Milwaukee faces with stopping the spread of COVID-19? Have you heard of strategies used in other cities to combat the virus? Join in. Your questions, your insights, 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. And Health Commissioner Jeanette Kowalik stays with us. Commissioner, the governor has said from the outset of this outbreak that he has been very concerned about vulnerable communities, including the homeless. What is Milwaukee focused on with those vulnerable communities?
So Milwaukee or the county, there's a group that has been meeting consistently to address the needs of the homeless and housing insecure population. So the fact that that group was already in motion is very important, because that helps when we're dealing with what we're dealing with now. We already have all the right players at the table. So the setup for Clare Hall was that started, I believe, 2 weeks ago or so. But nonetheless, there are people that are staying there right now. I think there's about 25 or 20-ish residents there right now. There's also another site that is set up. The Super 8 is another site. There's not that many people there right now, but again, as we're preparing for this surge, I'm sure that that will change. But just acknowledging that there are a number of people in our community that don't have a place to follow the safer at home order. And then there may be people that are in abusive situations where staying at home is not ideal or possible. So finding other places for them to stay is also important. So we've been working on that too, providing hotel and working with Sojourner Truth House on other options for people. So we're recommending 211 as the way to get access to these other housing solutions.
Who is staffing these housing sites, these housing solutions?
Well, the Clare Hall has a mix of folks. So some health department staff, some county staff, and then some National Guard medical staff.
How are people eating? Are meals provided?
Yes. So all of the basic human needs, basic necessities are available to people staying in these facilities. So, you know, we acknowledge that it's not just the housing piece, but it's also having a food, toiletries, clothing, you know, things of that nature.
We heard recently from State Representative David Bowen, who is a Democrat from Milwaukee, who himself had the coronavirus and says there are some reasons for the African-American community's higher infection rates. And one of those reasons, he said, are the economic factors. How can economic factors impact infection rates right now?
So when you look at just the history of Milwaukee and the fact that Milwaukee is one of the most segregated areas in the country, still, that impacts access to resources, the types of jobs people are able to get and hold, the quality of education, you know, access to healthy foods. You know, there's people in certain parts of town that can't get fresh produce and fresh meats, that their only access is a bodega or like corner store type of facility or arrangement. So a number of these things relate to one, causing a severe disadvantage. Like when we are asking people not to go out, you know, there's a number of people that are considered essential workers that are of color or that are low income and have to go into work, and they're being exposed to COVID-19 by just trying to go to work. So you're looking at a disadvantage that way, where the luxury of being able to telework is not available for everyone. If they do quit their jobs, are they able to stay in their homes? Are they able to still have groceries? Like, what is being made available to people so that they can truly shelter in place and stay at home and not have to risk their lives going to a job because they're considered essential in service industry jobs or manufacturing or whatever.
Right. So the risking of health just to be able to continue that paycheck, compromising their own health security with trying to keep a stable life. And that is a real factor you're seeing for many people in your community.
Yes, and this is just even looking at other communities as well across the country now that they're starting to share their race and ethnicity data on COVID, where you're seeing very similar data. And so Milwaukee was one of the first because, one, we declared racism as a public health issue as a county and as a city last year. And so that impacts how we see things, how we attack or attempt to address things. So including the race and ethnicity data from the start was very, very important to us because that aligns with us, our declaration. So that's why we did it, while we had this public facing map. But other jurisdictions are now going on the back end and trying to provide that data. So it's just, you know, again, I want to just share the rationale as to why we even started tracking by race and ethnicity, because it was important for us to do so. But the fact that the virus moved so quickly, and then initially, you know, the majority of cases were African-American middle-aged men. You know, when you look at the epidemiology of an outbreak, normally it's associated with some type of event or, you know, some point of infection. So say everybody went to a party or everybody went to this, you know, restaurant, or something had happened where there was a number of touch points where people were infected. But what we started seeing over time is that what really elevated this was these underlying disparities that were tied to inequity, tied to racist policies and practices playing out in these health outcomes. If you're seeing this in all these other cities across the country that have had these redlining issues, that have had, you know, a number of challenges with race relations, you're seeing this play out. So that definitely changes the investigation, you know, if you will. But, you know, you look at the distributions of poverty, the distributions of home ownership and housing value and infant mortality and violence and obesity and childhood lead poisoning, you see very similar distributions.
We're talking with Jeanette Kowalik, Commissioner of Health for the City of Milwaukee, looking more closely at how COVID-19 is impacting the Milwaukee and our state's largest city. You can join in with your questions about COVID-19 and your situation where you live, 800-642-1234. What do you think about the state's largest city's effort to quell the spread? What are some of the things, the challenges that you see in your own community? And how is your household surviving at this point? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@WPR.org. Commissioner, how can underlying health problems, also other ailments, impact complications with this virus?
Oh, that's a very good question, because some of the initial data out of China, which is, you know, where this virus originated, show that underlying health conditions, mainly cardiovascular disease and high blood pressure, were associated with higher rates of fatality. So when you look at that here in the States, and you know what tends to be our number one and number two causes of death, you know, heart disease, right? And then you see cancers and various other things. So there's a lot of poor health. And when we see this from a equity lens, we see poor health distributions, unbalanced or imbalanced distributions among communities of color and poor or low income people. And you see many of the areas or items that are listed as making someone high risk for more complications or possibly death from COVID-19 are all listed out. I mean, it's lung disease, including asthma, it's diabetes, it's if you are going through cancer treatment, it's, as noted, the cardiovascular disease, the high blood pressure, autoimmune conditions, you know, if you're someone's pregnant or was recently pregnant. So there's a number of concerns that are compromising the community's ability to fight this virus just by basically having a very strong and robust immune response. But it's compromised when someone has an underlying health condition, and not just one. If you have multiple, it increases your risk of death. So how healthy is our population? How sick is our population? That's very important to understand in our ability to fight COVID-19.
We have the City of Milwaukee Health Commissioner Jeanette Kowalik, who is with us through this hour. We're discussing how Milwaukee has responded to the coronavirus pandemic. And you can join in. What have you heard about Milwaukee's efforts to combat this virus? What strategies should the city employ that have worked in other cities? Do you agree with Milwaukee police enforcing the safer at home order? What challenges do you think Milwaukee faces due to its larger population? We want to hear from you. Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@WPR.org. We'll be back in a minute with Health Commissioner Jeanette Kowalik right here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Seven inmates at Milwaukee County's House of Correction have now tested positive for the coronavirus. Two are hospitalized. Four correction staff have tested positive. 21 other staffers are self-quarantining. One of the developments that we're following as we look at the toll of the pandemic on Milwaukee, what do you think about the city's effort to quell the spread? What are some of the things adding to the challenges that Milwaukee faces with stopping the spread of COVID-19? And what do you want the health department to do? What do you want to ask? Still time for you. 800-642-1234. City of Milwaukee Health Commissioner Jeanette Kowalik stays with us. Commissioner, as we've been talking about the higher infection rates, higher sickness rates in African-American communities, not only in Milwaukee, but so many other places around the country, are you in contact at all with other states on how they are addressing this issue? Are there any takeaways we can find from other states and how they are able to work with communities of color?
Yes. So as a public health professional, I'm a member of our professional associations, the American Public Health Association, and just acknowledging this is actually Public Health Week.
Yes, it is.
It's a way to elevate public health, but there's nothing like an outbreak, a pandemic, to elevate public health, unfortunately. And then the National Association of County and City Health Officials, which represents all of the health officers and commissioners across the country. So there's a lot of information sharing across those two groups. Then we also have the Wisconsin Public Health Association, which is our local statewide group representing public health professionals. So, you know, having an outlet, having an opportunity to reach out if there's questions about what's happening, how are they handling things, even like logistical things, is really, really helpful as information is coming out every hour and things are changing daily. It really helps us be nimble in our response. But, you know, I think many of my colleagues have reached out to us to find out how we were tracking race and ethnicity or why we were doing it, and then them working on trying to validate their data so they could provide that information. So, you know, that unknown variable, that's problematic. We need to get that down, like week one when it was very small. But now that it's gotten bigger, that's going to compromise some of our data. But we're working on a couple of activities to fill in the gaps there, because it's really important to have tight data to be able to make claims, you know, about various impacts of COVID-19 on race and ethnicity. But the fact that it initially week one was very, very valid and that we're seeing it play out, we can pretty much assume that what's happening is still impacting African Americans the most.
You talk about logistics. Let's look at that for a moment. One of the things is moving around PPE, the personal protection equipment. Logistically speaking, have you been able to move and distribute items that are needed in the places that they are needed most?
Well, PPE is like gold right now. It's very difficult to access it. I know that through our emergency operations center, so it's called the Unified Emergency Operations Center. So it's the county, all of the municipalities in Milwaukee County, and then a number of other, like state, for instance. So there's a group that focuses on procurement that has been working on gathering and acquiring PPE for first responders in healthcare. So, you know, that group has been working very hard on getting masks and, you know, goggles and all the other things that you need. But it's been very, very challenging. So that every day there's a different update related to access to PPE.
The state legislature and Governor Evers are working on legislation that may include funding for relief efforts in communities all over the state. If funding and more additional resources were allocated to Milwaukee, what would you spend it on first?
Well, I honestly believe that investing in the community, like providing some type of reparation, is very, very important right now. If people had access to more resources before this had occurred, then they would be able to be more more protected and more resilient in the fight against COVID-19. But right now we have to deal with the acute issue, which is making sure people can be safe at home and then be safer at home. So the housing aspect, you know, is it suspending rents, you know, things like that. Definitely the evictions and all of that was important. Access to healthy foods, you know, dropping off food for people, for families is very important. Medications, if anyone has medications that they need. Addressing mental health, you know, this is a very trying time for many individuals, and that people may be engaging in problematic behaviors such as self-medicating with substances and alcohol to get them through these tough times. And, you know, it's going to create more issues down the road of people needing to be in recovery and have access to services.
So basic needs, really important. I want to bring in a call now. Neil is joining us from La Crosse. Hi, Neil.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Yeah. My question is, you know, I'm a local psychiatrist here trained in Milwaukee, and, you know, I love the East Side. And, you know, I was wondering about contact tracing nations like Taiwan and South Korea have successfully contact traced. So I was wondering about, you know, either strongly encouraging you know, patients who test positive for COVID-19, voluntarily allowing GPS tracking through their cell phone provider, or would a court order help with the caveat that, you know, criminal or civil charge wouldn't arise from this order?
Yeah, that's a great point. The use of technology to make sure that there's compliance is a wonderful tool, because we don't have enough manpower, woman power for people, you know, to deploy police officers or sheriff at each property to make sure they're not leaving. We do that for like tuberculosis when we have a non-compliant patient, but that's just so one-off, you know, it's not like during a pandemic. But I know Google has been providing some analytics for movement, so you can see when the safer at home order went into effect, and if the majority of people are actually following it. So you're looking at miles of outside of their home of movement, and you're seeing reductions in that. So there is some positive aspects of that, but you're right. You know, if we have people that are not taking this seriously, people that despite being told and educated about COVID-19 and how deadly it can be, that are just going to go about life as usual. There is in state statute 252, there are very clear penalties for doing that. If you violate an isolation or a quarantine order, you can be charged your, of course, jail time, but up to $10,000 as a fine. And so like having that access through technology to see, did you violate the order? I mean, it's really important, because some people, let's be real, some people, they don't care about other people. Some people are very self-absorbed. And what we're trying to do is tease out those outliers versus the greater good, the people that do care and the people that want to get back to normal. So they are cooperating, or they're attempting to cooperate with the safer at home order. But we, you know, again, you have those bad actors, those outliers of people that are going to jeopardize and put other people at risk because of their selfish ambitions or desires.
Neil, so. Neil, thanks for calling. We only have a few seconds left, Commissioner, and we'd like to ask this question to everyone. What does your day look like today? What is your challenge you're addressing?
Oh, well, having enough energy to get through the day. I mean, these are very long, complicated days.
Sure.
We spend a lot of time briefing, troubleshooting, providing updated information through this unified emergency outreach or emergency operations center structure, and then making sure that we're pivoting when we get updated information. So it's like, you know, a master chess game.
Well, Commissioner Kowalik, thank you for joining us and taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
Jeanette Kowalik is Commissioner of Health for the City of Milwaukee. If you want to share this conversation online with others, you can find it later today at WPR.org/mornings. Coming up, we talk with the state leaders from both political parties about Tuesday's election and current events in the legislature. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.